Just in case you think that I'm making it up, those of you that are detailed folks like me, the reason the King James Bible is wrong in verse 1 of chapter 2, it says when Jesus was born. It's an aorist participle in Greek, which speaks of past action. Literally, it would be rendered Jesus being born in Bethlehem of Judea during the time of King Herod. Magi from the east came. So the linguistics of it, that's why every translation besides the King James uses the phrase after Jesus was born or when Jesus had been born. It is an indeterminate period of time, and I had to circle the word child. John Corson talked about his brother when they were children, their mom being one of their teachers and pointing this out to them, that the wise men did not come to the stable despite all of those beautiful little nativity scenes. The wise men weren't there for several years later. That John Corson said that his brother refused to put the wise men in their nativity scene. He took them out in the backyard every Christmas. Apparently in his kid brain, he figured out, according to scale, this is how far away they were from where Jesus was born, which I always thought was kind of cute. So some indeterminate period of time, it could have been a year and a half, as much as a year and a half. The word for child that I had you circle was used several times by angels as well as by the narrator, is the word for an infant, not a newborn baby. So, and by the time that the wise men actually got there, as we saw down in verse 11, they weren't in the stable anymore. They were living in a house. So I'm not saying you have to, you know, God's going to hate you if you have your little nativity set all there. You can put those guys anywhere you want to. That's just not the way that it happened. Well, why in the world did people think that it was? Well, I'm going to blame the Catholic Church simply because the Catholic Church places church tradition above Scripture. They're very open about it. They say, well, we really place church tradition in a higher place than the Scriptures. And, of course, that can get you into big trouble. Also, the Bible does not say how many wise men there were. And church tradition said there were three. Nowhere does the Bible say there were three. There could have been 17. There could have been 158. There could have been, I personally think there were a bunch of them. But the Bible doesn't say. And it's odd, but church tradition even gives them names, which is not, it's not mentioned anywhere. It's not mentioned in the historical record. It's not mentioned in the Bible. In fact, one of my favorite authors, was it Henry Van Dyke that wrote The Fourth Wise Man? Very, very popular book, neat book, but it's just pure fiction, not really biblical, and I don't know that that's an important detail. But in Bethlehem, Jesus was born. Why was he in Bethlehem? We talked last week about how you possibly could get a pregnant Jewish teenager to ride a donkey over a week's journey, and we did it in an air-conditioned Mercedes bus with nice cold water bottles in the cooler, and it was kind of a torturous trip, windy roads. I can't imagine being pregnant and riding a donkey that way. They had no choice because Caesar made a decision that all Jewish people, in order for them to have an accurate census and accurate taxation, they all had to go to the place of their ancestral home. For Joseph was Bethlehem. So they didn't have a choice. It's interesting that God, knowing beforehand what was going to happen, we talked about this last week. We talked about it Wednesday night also about prophecy. How amazingly accurate God is, because he already knows the future because he's already there. So God could see him riding the donkey when he spoke through the prophet Micah about where the Messiah was going to be born. God was watching him make the journey. I always get excited when I see God predicting the future because he's already there. He's not guessing like we do. I remember looking back this last winter thinking, how am I going to survive the winter with gas prices at $4.50 a gallon? I'll have to choose between food and heat for my house, and I won't be able to drive anywhere. People will have to come get me. I couldn't see 4 months down the road that gas prices would be around $2 a gallon. I wouldn't have believed you if you told me. I made all my judgments about the difficulty of the future based on events that were happening right now. That's very unwise, going either direction, both in fear and both in planning for good things, because face it, folks, we don't know what's going to happen. That's why it's good to listen very carefully when you make your plans to the Lord, because he does know what's going to happen. So Bethlehem, the Bible tells us why Bethlehem was the place. And it's so interesting that the religious leaders knew exactly where Messiah was going to be. There are over 300 specific Old Testament prophecies that were fulfilled by Jesus between his birth and his death and resurrection. 300 of them. It's astronomical, the odds of that even being possible. In fact, it is impossible statistically, unless God knows what's going to happen. If you have a translation that says Ephrata, E-P-H-R-A-T-A, that was Bethlehem's old name. Same town. Bethlehem means house of bread. We weren't allowed to go there. We just had to sit out because it's a Palestinian-occupied town. We could sit on the hillside next to our bus, and we could look across. And once again, I have been there back in the days before it was a Palestinian town, and it's kind of a dirty place. I don't know what it was like. It was pretty much a nothing of a place, even in Jesus' day. Gail Irwin points out all of this stuff in his book, The Jesus Style, to say that if you look at the events that God engineered around Jesus' life, God was sending a very clear message about his approachability. He was sending a very clear message that he was reaching down to normal humans. Nothing about the way Jesus was born or the way he lived his life would say, I'm sorry, I'm more important than you are. Talk to my secretary, she'll make an appointment. Nothing about Jesus, because God sent him to send the opposite message. Boy, Bethlehem is sure nothing of a town when you see it. King Herod is Herod the Great. It tells us here that when Herod was the king, he was appointed the king of Judea by Rome. So for that reason, the Jews hated him. Another reason the Jews hated him is he was not Jewish. He was an Edomite, an Edomian. And he was their king. He wasn't of their nationality, and he was appointed by Rome. They had no say in the matter. They hated him. He was an amazing builder. In fact, I was noticing National Geographic just did a month or two ago a couple of really beautiful articles on Masada, which was one of his palaces, and on many of the things that we saw in Israel to this day. Pretty remarkable architect and builder. Up on Masada, you had running hot water, beautiful tiled mosaics that you can still see in that hot, dry desert climate. But Herod was, of all of the Herods, and there were many Herods, this particular Herod called Herod the Great, they were all paranoid. We're going to see later in verse 3, it says, when Herod heard this, he was disturbed. He was freaked out, and all Jerusalem was freaked out with him. Well, it was the saying in Rome was that it's safer to be Herod's pig than one of his children, because he murdered three of his sons. He murdered his wife. He murdered his mother-in-law. When he knew that he was dying at the age of 70, he had the 100 most loved and influential people in Jerusalem imprisoned, and the orders were given, the minute you hear that I died, I want you to kill this 100 people, because I want there to be tears on the day that I die. And he realized everybody hated him. He was a bad dude. Obviously, God doesn't think the way we do about the places he picks and the times that he picks to do the good work that he wants to do. Because see, the work that God is going to do depends on him. It doesn't depend on demographics and the political climate and whether Republicans or Democrats are in power. God just does his work when God wants to do his work, and sometimes the very contrast of it is breathtaking. God didn't have a strategy session and say, you know, we really can't send my son into the world until the climate is just right where he'll be received. Boy, there's a great sermon in there, isn't there? Magi is the word that the Greek text uses. In my NIV translates, some of the translations say wise men. It is what the word magi means, but it's more specific in Greek. It's the word for a Persian wise man. And the closest example I can think of what these guys were is the Druids in the Celtic countries. Because they were scientists, they were naturalists, they were astronomers, but they all were also priests of that pagan religion. They were the most learned in all of those areas, of everyone in Persia, of all of the of all of that culture in Persia, which is modern day Iraq and Iran, which is kind of interesting. When they, magi from the east, that's wise men from Persia, came to Jerusalem and said, where is the one who's been born the king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and we've come to worship him. Couple of big questions that this brings to my brain. Why would they even be interested in a speck on the map, in a culture that they virtually would have despised as Babylonians? Why would they even care that a king would have been born in an occupied country? Much less care enough to risk their lives for an 800-plus-mile journey through some of the most torturous country to this day on planet Earth, through hostile places where they would have been hated, and then bring a bunch of treasure with them, just begging to be robbed. What in the world could have possessed them? Well, I want to talk about this for a minute because it shows you how far ahead God was working. Turn to the book of Daniel. I love the book of Daniel. I love chapters 1 and 2 especially. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, came all the way, brought his army all the way from this part of Persia, laid siege to Jerusalem, ripped off the best, the brightest, the best looking of all of the young people of Israel and took them back to deprogram them. He took four specific people that are covered. We call them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar gave him Babylonian names named after Babylonian gods. He wanted to totally erase their Hebrew identity, much as the British Empire did when they came into the Highlands of Scotland and made it illegal to wear tartans and to even speak your own language in order to destroy this defiant culture so that you could absorb them. So here's Daniel, three of his friends taken back to Babylon, and they were schooled, brainwashed, literally, programmed in the science and the culture and the arts and the religion of Babylon. And the interesting thing is it says they excelled over all of the Babylonian students in all of those areas, and yet they never lost their devotion to the one true God, which to my way of thinking says that it is possible for a Christian to go to a secular school and not be ruined. But it just depends not on being isolated from the world, it depends on being insulated from the world. And these young men were so schooled, so devoted to the God of Israel, that even with all of the programming of a pagan society in which they excelled, they still kept their Jewishness. They still kept their belief in the one true God. And you know the story, the King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, bad dude, flaunting his kingship and basically saying that people had to worship him. I mean, he was pretty much an egomaniac. He had some very troubling dreams. And so he asked all of his smart druids, his magi, he asked all of them not only to interpret the dream, because basically it's like a horoscope. You could read a horoscope and make it say just about anything you want it to say. But he said, look, if you guys are real, I want you to tell me what my dream was and then tell me what my dream meant. And they said, well, who can do that? Well, he said, well, you're supposed to be able to do that. Here I'm trusting you for all my counsel. If you can't tell me what my dreams were and then tell me what they meant, I'm just going to kill all of you because you're useless. So Daniel and his three friends were put in a place of being killed right along with the other wise men. And Daniel said, guys, we need to pray. And then he went before the king and he said, look, I don't think you should kill all those people. Nobody can do what you're asking. He said, I know I have a reputation for being able to interpret dreams, but he said, that's wrong. I can't do anything. But he said, I know a God who can not only tell you what your dreams were, he's the one that gave them to you. He can tell you what they mean. So Daniel says, no, it's not me. There's no point in killing all these guys. They're just humans like I am. But he says, I know a God. And of course, you know the whole story. You read the whole story of Daniel refusing to bow down, being thrown in the den of lions, and the three other guys being thrown into the fiery furnace. I mean, these are guys that were, their faith was put to the test. When Daniel interpreted the dream properly, this is not the only time that the king said this, but he said, your God's the real God in chapter 2 of Daniel, verse 47. Surely your God is the God of gods, the Lord of lords, the Lord of kings, and the revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. He said virtually the same thing when Daniel was unharmed in the lion's den, and when the other three were unharmed, thrown into the fire. I'm going to read verse 48 of Daniel chapter 2. And then the king placed Daniel in a high position, lavished many gifts on him. He made him rule over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all of its wise men. So here you have a couple of hundred years later. Daniel lived to be almost 100 years old. He had great influence in that land. This is one of the first instances that we see. He was responsible. He was in charge of the scientific, the cultural, and the religious instruction as the leader of all of the wise men of Babylon. So here we see a couple of hundred years later, a star comes in the east. Daniel had prophesied later in his life about the events that were going to happen when Messiah came the first time and the events that were going to happen when Messiah comes the second time. Daniel himself didn't know what they meant. God says, don't worry, when they're happening, those people will know what it means. So here's Daniel's influence a couple of hundred years later that was strong enough in these people that they not only wanted to travel that dangerous, life-threatening journey of over 800 miles, but they came to worship. You think it matters where God puts you? You think that if God puts you in a place where you're totally surrounded by pagans, that you should get out of there as quick as you can? You might, folks, be having more of an influence than you can imagine. You might be having an influence that is going to last way past your lifetime. I was talking with some folks this morning from the town my family lives in California. And it just brought back when my father had his accident where he got his brain damage and he was taken into the hospital and he was hooked up to life support. And of course, we all flew in from all over the place to be there with him. And they said that there was such severe damage that, you know, if he survives, he's basically going to be pretty much mentally a vegetable. And people, word got around town, it's a pretty good sized town, a couple hundred thousand people. People came in to see my father, who had not worked with him for 30 years, that were young, you know, coke snorting, dope smoking musicians that hung around the music store that my dad managed, came in to see my father, sat there and talked to the family. Some of them, we were all weeping. Well, we were very emotional because we loved my dad. But we were blown away by the influence my father had. I'll never forget some of the things that people said. They hadn't even seen, you know, hadn't really had a conversation with him for 30 years. One young man looked and said, "This is the only honest man I've ever known in my life." Took time out of his day to come in and just say that to somebody. Do not underestimate the influence that your life can have. I keep that in the front of my mind because I pretty much feel like I'm not making a dent in this dark place. Anytime you start feeling like you're not making a dent in this dark place, that's a lie. Because you have the living God living in you. And he makes a difference. Why were these guys even interested? Why did they travel? Why did they come to worship? Not just to honor, to worship. Why did they bow down and worship? I submit you can trace that all the way back to Daniel. Not just Daniel. You could trace it back to the other godly people that were there. That would include Esther and Mordecai. They had their place. But Daniel was the guy who was in charge of the wise men for decades. And it made a difference. I don't know why I read that, and it just is thrilling to me. So be faithful. Just bloom where God's planted you. You are making a difference. Thank you, Marilyn, for sending me that note saying that very same thing to me because I needed to hear it. So Herod hears about one other little comment I wanted to make about this. God cannot resist a searching heart. He doesn't care where people are. He doesn't care what they're surrounded by. If a heart is searching for God, God will see to it that they find him. God will see to it that they are drawn to his son. I've heard some remarkable things the last Calvary Chapel Pastors Conference that I was at about the amazing revival that's happening in some Islamic countries. You won't hear anything about it. People can't talk about it because their lives would be threatened. I mean, some startling things. Jesus Christ, the living Jesus Christ, revealing himself to people who will make the life-threatening choice to become believers in Jesus. I read something this last week, and I was hoping I could pass it on to you, and it fits really well in here. The reason that God can't resist a heart that's seeking him is because we're not the ones seeking the truth. The truth is seeking us. Remember Jesus said, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. The truth is a person. And Jesus said, and here's what I came for. I came to seek and to rescue those that are lost. You have somebody that you love, and you're worried, well, they don't seem to be interested in the truth. You know what? Rest your heart. The truth is interested in them. And your prayers matter. He is seeking them. I just want to talk to Daniel when I get to heaven. He's one of my heroes. First of all, I'm just in awe of the kind of courage that he had and the stick-to-itiveness, my great-grandma used to say. The tenacity to just hang in there and refuse to be influenced by his culture, the pagan culture, and to shine, not knowing that the fruit that was going to come generations upon generations later from his life. I want to talk to him. He'd be an interesting person to talk to. But you know what just blows me away about that? God was so far ahead of everybody. He always is.